Here we are.
Picture.
Okay.
It's still not doing. There we go. We're live.
We're live. Hey, everybody.
So, before we start our thing, if anybody out there is really well versed in Facebook Live, can you message me? For some reason, when we try to start a live feed from a page, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It only works from my personal profile. And this is irritating because this isn't just my personal show. This is done by, it's a collaboration of two organizations. So anybody, you can help me out with that. Mark Zuckerberg, if you're watching, it's time. I'm calling my favor now.
All right.
So for those that haven't watched this before, don't know who I am, I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I'm the director of the Center for Prophetic Imagination, which we explore that intersection between contemplation and resistance, or mysticism and radical politics, that kind of delicious soup.
Yeah, and I'm Daniel Wolpert, and I direct the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing, or MICA. And we do a lot of similar sort of work, the intersection of spiritual life and leadership, healing and the arts. And I thought this was an appropriate t-shirt for today.
I'm not dead yet.
I'm not dead yet.
Yet.
Yet, right?
I'm going to share this link of the feed to those different places if you want to like kind of set us up.
Okay, great. Yeah, so when we thought about doing this last week and getting going on this, we talked about the fact that we were going to share different issues and perspectives that the coronavirus pandemic seems to be revealing, unveiling, bringing up. And so last week, we had our first two sessions. We talked about mental health and just kind of the baseline of like, where are we at? And then on Friday, we began to talk about this general category of unveiling, right? That this is sort of an apocalyptic moment. And we talked a lot about some of the political issues that seem to be unveiling. And one of the things in our kind of pre-setup this morning that Mark and I talked about is that what we'd like to do is flip back and forth between general subject matters. So today we thought we would delve a little bit into some of the faith issues that seem to be coming up. We also talked about that, you know, at some point we might have more of a kind of comedy or light sort of approach to this. Not quite sure what that would be, but anyway, we may be able to think of something. So today we're going to dive into the faith things. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of discussions about this relative to faith issues, to God issues, all kinds of responses from the church and churches ranging quite widely. Mm-hmm. And then welcome to everybody. See, we've got a number of folks commenting already.
It's mostly kind of like, hey.
Hey, how's it going?
What's going on? Jonathan shared a link, which I'll look at later. Facebook Help Center.
Jonathan, you're the tech guy. Help us.
I'm skeptical of Facebook Help Center articles.
Yeah, a lot of them aren't helpful. But.
Yeah, so I mean, the way I only listened to half of what you said because I was doing this, so I apologize. It shows I'm not good at multitasking. but there's a few different angles to this. There's the way that people's weird faith responses are strange, but there's also like, I'm just curious about different ways people approach spirituality and theology, how it's coming out now, and then also like, what is this doing to it? Like, so, you know, after 9/11 happened, there was all sorts of theological books written about theology after 9/11, because for Americans, it was this big moment, a defining moment. And so there's a lot of reflection that came out of that. And so I'm assuming that'll happen here, too.
Of course, what was interesting about that time versus this time, right, that'll be neat to watch is that, so after 9/11, all the churches were full because people could get together and go to church. So now we're having this moment where maybe people are turning to their faith, but they can't go to church, or at least most of the mainline churches, right? Then you have this other phenomenon of there are some churches that are full, and then soon they'll be full of sick people. Yeah, so that's just that spatial difference is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and which I'm assuming that this will hasten the numeric decline of the church in America, because people who are, once you break a habit of something, a lot of people go to church out of habit, and mm-hmm. this habit might be broken for them. But mm-hmm. I want to kind of respond to the people who are still, like, almost with bold defiance going to church still, because yes. that's, you know, I grew up, for those who don't know, I kind of came up among charismatics and Pentecostals in rural Minnesota. That was my, you know, I had my conversion, fundamentalist Bible camp conversion at 14. And that's, I would have been the sort of person who would have thought all this was stupid, like that these people are being irrational because liberal elites do that. And and that, like, if you have faith, you still go to church. Mm-hmm. And so I'm seeing a lot of that, and it's been surprising me how much I've seen that, because I almost always work under this assumption that I'm living in a Facebook bubble. So when all of a sudden people are like, here's a picture of me at church, and there's like, you know, 500 people, and they're like, yeah, screw you, liberal elites. Like, I'm like, wow, that made it through the gauntlet into my bubble.
Well, and it's interesting how it is connected with this very kind of toxic masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So there's a one pastor that's like, you know, we're not going to be wusses. You know, there's a lot of that kind of language. Like, we're not going to be afraid of this virus. And, you know, you even just shook your fist.
I'm going to punch that virus in the face.
Right. Yeah, and so there's this very toxic masculine American kind of approach to that, which,
well, even the way Trump is referring to himself as a wartime president now, like using the metaphor of war, mm-hmm. like, which we do for all kinds of stupid things in this society, but like we're not at war with a virus. It's not exactly how it works. Well, so instead of using a healing and care metaphor, he went for a war metaphor.
Yeah. So what, have you got any?
No questions yet.
No questions or comments?
I'll keep looking back. Okay. So, I mean, if I'm more curious about your experience of faith from different angles, like some of the things you're seeing that maybe you want to like poke at as you think of as an unhelpful response, maybe how you personally are responding to this mm-hmm. from your own faith. Like, what is it revealing to you? How are you experiencing faith?
And you know, one of the things you brought up when we were just getting going beforehand, which I do think is very central to all this, is the issue of the image of God, right? So I've had a number of friends, seen a number of posts and comments, and these would be folks in the more mainline traditions that want to be very clear to say, I'm not saying God sent this virus to hurt us, right? So, you know, that's clearly one of the ideas of the image of God, right? This sort of wrathful, the psychotic warlord image, as I like to call it. You know, so God is sending this virus to punish us. And of course, we've already seen a bunch of that. You know, this is a punishment for homosexuality. That's the favorite one. I think every virus has been a punishment for homosexuality. You know, and then you've got the other image where it's like, no, God doesn't send things to hurt us. God uses or works through difficult things to either maybe teach us something or help us or reorient us. So that issue of what is our image of God relative to God's actions and temperament is a really important one.
Yeah, whether we see God as the cause or an agent. And even with that second one of like somehow experiencing God being present in it, that gets tricky, because like even the idea of like God allowed this to happen to teach us a valuable lesson is like still
right.
still kind of abusive.
Yeah.
But there is like, as things happen to us, we experience one who suffers with us so that we can like grow in our capacity. That's mm-hmm. that's more of an accompaniment model of God. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this, and this one's going to be, I know some of you that are watching are probably maybe think like this, so you might feel like I'm chastising you. But I see you switch God with the word nature, the idea that this is nature's vengeance to cleanse the world of the real virus that is humanity, which gets into very Malthusian kind of ideas that the problem is that humanity as a whole is this plague, which tends to lump in like Jeff Bezos with, I posted on this earlier on Facebook, with some indigenous child in Papua New Guinea as both representing the same plague. Those are different kinds of ways. There's different ways of being human. Mm-hmm. And so having lacking an analysis to understand which patterns of humanity are toxic and just throwing all of humanity under the bus doesn't help us at all, because it's not like we can just hope and pray for a plague to wipe us out to save the earth. Maybe we should come up with tactics and like maybe end the way we do capitalism and environmental degradation. Yeah.
Well, to me, the other challenge with that line of thinking is that it does what I see all the time, which is that it separates us as human beings from nature.
Yes.
And we're not separate from nature. I mean, we are a part of nature. We've arisen out of nature. Therefore, everything that we do, both good and bad, is a part of nature. But I see this all the time of kind of like, well, the trees are good, people are bad, right? That, you know, nature is good, people are bad. And that's just a very inaccurate distinction. And so much of this gets at issues of kind of cosmic agency, right? Like, is there, of course, this is where the atheists come in and just say, well, the whole discussion is silly because there isn't any cosmic agency. There's just, you know, molecules bumping into each other, heat, energy, light happening, and just whatever happens, happens. And so, you know, that sense of, how do things unfold? How do things happen? It's very, very interesting to reflect on.
And so there's some comments coming up here that I can draw on. Ellen points out that, you know, Biden has also used this sort of like punching the virus in the face kind of metaphor. doesn't surprise me at all. Hashtag, where is Joe?
Like, yeah. he's talked about a lot of things of punching things in the face.
That's his go-to.
That is his go-to.
Toxic masculinity lives on both sides of the political aisle, which is a small spectrum anyways. Merv Horse wrote, I take part in a daily meditation session, 45 minutes, with a church in New York. This morning there were 25 participants. Zoom has been a godsend. I've been seeing that a lot more. And again, I don't know how much this is a bubble effect. Of course, if you're watching Facebook, you're going to notice people's digital activity more. And I don't know how representative it is, but I've been seeing a lot of prayer and coffee times. I don't know what percentage of the population as a whole is engaging it, but I'm definitely seeing more of this than I used to. Like, all kinds of things. Like, I was talking to Dan earlier about this, how it's strange watching like Stephen Colbert from like his balcony with a webcam that's crappier than ours trying to do a show, or Patrick Stewart reading Shakespeare. Like, there's a lot of these sorts of homey, quiet things, which we might not think of those as spiritual, but to me, there's a spirituality to Patrick Stewart reading Shakespeare to you, like a loving grandfather.
I've seen a ton of that, and I feel like people are very hungry for that. I mean, I think I mentioned to you the other day that, you know, I've never had the experience of so many people jumping on Facebook posts, wanting to have conversation, wanting to engage, you know, and obviously, I mean, people are cooped up inside, right? And so, I do feel like, you know, people talk about what are the effects of this going to be. And I certainly do think one of the effects of this, not necessarily people are going to want to keep doing this as much, but I think people understanding that, this is possible. Like, this kind of prayer, digital community, reflection time, solidarity is possible. And I mean, I think that's great.
Deborah points out, your spouse, some of the men you are describing might also have physical characteristics that make them at higher risk for the complications of COVID. That might also change the theology that God is punishing us for something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ellen writes that the lectionary yesterday was John 9, where Jesus healed a man born blind, where Jesus disavowed sickness being a punishment from God. Yeah, this idea of, I've been thankfully ignorant of people posting a lot of that, but you know that's out there.
Oh, I've seen a lot of it.
Yeah, I've been just going out of my way to avoid that, because that few things piss me off more than when people use their religion as a way to justify suffering.
Well, and again, it's, you know, this very much is a theme across a lot of religious traditions as an ancient explanation for sickness and suffering. And even within, you know, what we're calling now indigenous traditions, which, I mean, the Hebrew Bible to me is an indigenous tradition in a lot of ways. You know, there is this feeling that sickness is about imbalance, or it's about sin, or some kind of problem. And so, you know, I think that that's a very deep-seated thing. And you know, you can even see this in some ways in the way we talk about sickness from a non-theological point of view, right? So people will say, and, you know, you've certainly talked a lot about this, like, well, you know, you eat too much and you don't do X, Y, or Z, you're going to get sick, right? And so, I mean, it's tricky because there is a cause and effect in some ways, but then there's idea when you layer on top that there's this invisible being keeping score behind the scene and coming to get you. That's what becomes really, really horrible.
There's a balance in cause and effect. Yeah, like the idea of, I mean, I don't think we evolved for hyperglobal mobility, right?
Right.
So hyperglobal mobility, starting with the conquest leading to today, is going to cause more sickness. So is that, if you want to use the metaphor of balance, maybe that works, but it does, when you start looking at balance to saying like, and here some folks commenting, I think I'm going to cluster a few of these. DG
Holmes, COVID cluster.
COVID cluster. and God allows these things to happen so God can suffer along with us. Question mark. Mary F. Turco writes, Richard Rohr says God uses everything not as a punishment or a way to improvement, but as a time for joining. You know, even that, like, I've just been thinking about this, and this isn't me trying to assert my view over, but this, I'm explaining how I look at this. Even this, the language of God using, I get, I'm realizing more and more that my spirituality, it tends to be apophatic, which I don't want to get into too much, but like this idea that God is mystery, and that you kind of, for me, my faith is primarily about like letting go of things that are not God and not really trying to really spend a lot of time analyzing the agency of God and figuring out what God's plan is or use, like that sort of, to me, that means that I tend to practically have a weak view of God, or that my faith is found that God is present in the midst of it, like, and not doing much orchestration at all. Other people tend to have a very authoritarian view of God, even very progressive people, where they see God as like the grand architect of all of reality, and that it's just, if we could see things from God's perspective, we'll realize it all works out great. Which, I mean, I don't have any real, I don't want to argue against that point. It's just not how I experience God. But like these sorts of things about even trying to understand like how God uses or God is present, it gets really complicated quick.
Yeah, well, and again, to me, it's this issue of agency. I mean, one of the things that I very much resonate as you're talking about this as a student of the spiritual life is that, you know, what does it mean if we let go completely of the idea that God is an actor the way we think of action, right? Because again, anytime you go down that road, it becomes highly problematic. I mean, if you say that God can act to do X and not do Y, you know, the obvious thing that, and again, every atheist realizes this, right? Is constantly joking about. So why didn't God just stop the virus? You know, this whole thing of like, oh, well, God can do stuff, but God then also suffers with us. Well, why? You know, why doesn't God just stop that? So to me, the and as you said, your experience of the divine, and this is my experience more and more, is that, you know, loving presence does not necessarily imply the ability to act. So what if we let go of God as actor altogether? You know, then that sort of short circuits a lot of these conundrums.
Well, I mean, this opens up all kinds of things. I'm going to get to some of these.
Get to some of these.
And just so everyone knows, my sense is there might be up to a 30-second lag. I've noticed in when I'm watching the feed versus what we're actually doing now. So we're doing our best to read through this.
So we're all in a time warp together. DGS
mentions about he'd love for us to discuss how this virus is showing the true colors of capitalism. We did that a little bit last week, and we'll definitely get into more about this. Those who didn't tune in from the beginning, we're going to try to go bop from spirituality to politics to different themes, kind of all around this, and not flavor it up.
Yeah, and then if you haven't seen it, so we've created a page for this called Transmission on Facebook, where we're going to be archiving all the videos. And on Friday we talked a lot about that, and we'll definitely talk more what this is revealing about capitalism. I'd say the summary of that is basically capitalism doesn't care about taking care of people.
our system isn't designed to care for people. Right. And so that's why it's breaking down, because there's no sense of common good built into capitalism.
No.
And also, just to throw this out there too, we are going to, hopefully this week, we'll do our first interview, which will be a pre-recorded, and then we'll post it as a live party. We'll see how that goes. We're going to take that as it comes. DG also writes that he's holding morning, midday, and evening prayers live on Facebook. He provides a link in the comments.
Great. Cool.
How he's attempting to provide recentering and refocus from his personal prayer life with this new community that is starting. I know, DG, you've been working on that for a while. For those who do know him, DG's a great guy, and if he's not some weirdo, so go check that out. Go check that out. It's worth your time. And I know there's other people doing regular prayers, and I'm thinking about whether or not it might be useful to do that too.
Even if he is a weirdo, you're online, so you're far apart from them.
Yeah,
so.
You can always just,
okay.
You can just, always disconnect and run. Colin writes, in combination with an attempt to meditate with scriptures of liberation, that's good. Mm-hmm. I'm doing my best to keep my focus on the necessary emancipated world after this. Now, that's a whole other interesting conversation topic. What is emerging from this? Mm-hmm. After this, and learning about radical orgs to stay plugged into going forward. I'm keeping this Mark Fisher quote in mind all the time. Quote, the long, dark night of the end of history has to be grasped as an enormous opportunity. The very oppressive pervasiveness of capitalist realism means that even glimmers of alternative political and economic possibilities can have a disproportionately great effect. The tiniest event can tear a hole in the gray curtain of reaction, which has marked the horizons of possibility under capitalist realism. From a situation in which nothing can happen, suddenly anything is possible again.
Yeah. Well, and I do think, and I wrote about this yesterday on my Facebook page, I do think that one of the things that this has unveiled is the lie of we can't do a lot of big things. Right. So we've been hearing this for months now, right, in the Democratic political campaign. You know, the problem with Bernie is that these are two big things and we can't do them. Right. We can't do health care. We can't change stuff. We're changing our entire society in 3 weeks. So we now know, thanks to the virus, that you can make big changes. Right. You can make big changes. You just have to be motivated. And I do think that in terms of God and the notion of liberation, right? I mean, that is, in many ways, a way of reading what Jesus does for people. He comes and he says, no, you know what? Liberation is possible right now, right? The kingdom of God is here right now. You know, you were a leper, you're an outcast, now you're not. And so, you know, I think that one thing to me that we can take away from this is that actually the realm of possibility is always far bigger than we think that it is.
So a bunch of more comments. Ellen writes that John 9:3 is the can of worms in yesterday's lectionary. Quote, that God's works might shine forth in this individual. We've alluded to that. That is, that Yeah, I'm just going to lump a couple of these comments in together. Murph says, but at the core, God was an actor in creating the universe. Meanwhile, Deborah Asbury says, I love this, to let go of the divine as an actor. And then Colin writes, isn't entirely letting go of God as an actor just becoming a deist? I think there's a lot of stuff there. And this is like, oh, wow, this, we could spend an hour.
Well, we'll come back to it.
Yeah. But I do want to say, like, it's not that I don't think, maybe God is an actor. Like, I think we assume we know what it means when we say God is a creator,
right,
or God has agency. And suddenly, and somehow historically that's ended up with a God who's somewhat of an architect, who's a bit static and mechanistic.
Well, we just project our idea of what acting means.
Of what God. And then whatever we think of as authority, we think of the biggest version of that, right? That's God. And so to me, it's, okay, is God an actor? Well, God is present. Talk about presence and not, and try to assume that that presence is more mysterious than it is knowable. That's my starting point. But then also, what does it look like for Jesus? I mean, this is the whole Christian thing. What does it look like for Jesus to create? It's not very mechanistic and determinative. It's invitational. And it, again, it centers on possibility of opening up possibilities for people to walk through, creating moments of freedom.
Right. I mean, when Jesus was here, he didn't create anything, right?
He made some wine.
Well, right, he made wine.
Yeah.
That's about it. Right, but I mean, he didn't make an organization. He didn't make an empire, which is what a lot of people thought, right? Again, if he's God, he's the biggest imperial actor. You know, he didn't do much of anything. I guess he did some carpentry work when he was young, but, you know, that's about it.
He mentioned, according to the... Mel Gibson, Jesus movie, The Passion of the Christ, he invented the chair.
He invented the chair.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was good. Yeah. But so as you said, the action, though, that he did was to create these open moments. And those, you know, and that quote that you read is about that, right? So these open moments actually then allow for some kind of creativity and something new to happen. And so to create and allow those, and this is what the spiritual life does, is in our own minds and in our own communities, it allows us to have these open moments where something new and hopefully more loving and life-giving can happen. And that's a very different kind of agency.
Yeah, it's just, so I think it's a more of a, not like saying God isn't an actor, it's just we can't just assume we know what those things mean.
Mm-hmm.
Just, we got to be careful. Because, I mean, it leads, a lot of this stuff is part of the infrastructure of crap theology. Not that it doesn't have to be, but like it tends to play into these assumptions. Yeah. Just more things on here just to get to as much as I can. Alan writes again, have you ever seen those memes with Joel Osteen quotes superimposed over pictures of starving children from the third world?
Unfortunately.
Man, Joel Osteen, that's another kind of, I haven't listened to any of his. Is he still having big
church services? They had him on Good Morning America today talking about faith and
they're still
coronavirus.
Having, oh, wow. Yeah. He's another person I will intentionally
avoid. Why don't they have us on Good Morning America?
I don't know.
All right.
If I were in charge of Good Morning America, I'd have no idea. Our binary way of thinking, this is from Deborah Asbury. Our binary way of thinking precludes us understanding how the universe came into being, not as an act, but as an event of love and beauty and mystery. Yeah, I like that.
Nice.
Kathleen, I don't see God as an actor, but as a source of spiritual strength that we can tap into.
Okay. Yeah.
Catherine, Parent, the why feels a lot less important to me as a theological, I don't know what the next word is, maybe it's, yeah, because it feels like part of the same why as all the other suffering, epidemics, human-made disasters, mm-hmm. colonialism. Oh, question, as a theological question. Facing death, why feels much less important to me than being present and being with others?
Yeah.
I desperately don't want people to die, but I am also feeling comforted in my relative powerlessness by theologies of liberation and lament that move beyond expecting God or each other to have some easy fix for suffering. Yeah.
That's great.
You know, Catherine is the chair of the CPI board.
Yeah.
So
So, all right. Well, do you have one more? I think our time's
There's
up.
There's two more comments I can read here. What if all God proper ever created was order out of chaos in the first place? That's a good question. Catherine writes again, this will be the last thing we read and then we'll close out here. I've never liked the Christian idea of clouds and harps heaven, but the idea that we are all part of God and each other and have meaning and presence far beyond what humans judge or assign to each other means a lot to me.
Yeah, beautiful.
My takeaway from some of this is I've noticed when I was talking on Facebook the other day and it dawned on me that political conversations, for me, they've always been very practical and important, and it's been a huge part of my life. Like, I don't think of myself as a ivory tower academic type person, but I realized that there was a quality in which my reflections had much more weight. Like, to me, talking about capitalism, what comes after capitalism, was a bit more of a fun speculation before. Now it's like, okay, if we don't do this right, these are the kind of scenarios that can shift us more quickly into fascism. So we have to think about it. And I think my theology is a little bit like that too. And for a lot of people in times like this, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, and it's hard because if you do, and I've seen this with a lot of people growing up who are evangelical in particular, they have this very sturdy kind of mechanistic view of God. And then when stuff like this happens, it just kind of cracks and falls apart, and they don't have any idea that there could be another way of looking at this. Yeah. And so my hope is, as people are kind of forcefully being unplugged from church gatherings and they're entering in a time maybe of more quietude than they've had for a while, that we take this as an opportunity to think about what is a vibrant spirituality look like that is meaningful in a time like this, that actually helps us live better with each other.
Yeah.
And maybe evangelicalism, like you see articles all the time, like evangelicalism is finally in decline. Like, it's powerful. But maybe this will be a great moment where new ways of spirituality kind of flourish more. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking
about. Well, and I think we've seen this even just in a short time with these comments and reflections, which have been really beautiful. And so thank you very much.
Thanks
for hanging out and for watching if you watch later. And so we'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah. And this stuff, we're going to post this. This is live, but it's going to be available after the fact. I'll post it on my page here on the transmission page where we're archiving things. And then people are still having conversation. That's good. And that'll keep happening. So we'll see you hopefully tomorrow.
Peace. Bye.
Thank you.